Overheard at Yoga is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications expert and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. It's your girl, Christina. This is Overheard at Yoga. So let's crank up the heat and get down, dog. Okay, awesome. Well, let's begin. Hi, Kurt. How are you?
I'm doing really good, Christina. Thanks for having me on your program.
Yeah, thanks for coming on my little podcast. So we don't know each other. We've never met, but our mutual friend, Naomi Jones, who owns, I think it's 21 North Yoga Studio in the North End, she texted me one day and she's like, you got to get Kurt on the podcast. So thank you so much for coming.
Couldn't be happier. And Naomi, oh my gosh, I think that woman, she's an incredible woman. Her husband, Paul's incredible. I kind of feel she's almost the torch carrier of yoga in Boise right now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great studios, but man, she puts a lot of passion into it and always trying to help the community.
Yes.
Great woman.
Yes. So how did you meet her?
How did I meet her? It's a pretty fun story. I walked the Camino de Santiago in 2012, and I was doing yoga at Donna's place, which at the Summits was called, and now it's Yoga 6 or whatever on Broadway. And apparently I didn't know Paul or Naomi. I knew neither of them. And Paul had walked in the studio and was talking to somebody and said something about that he wanted to walk the Camino and that he knew that there was a guy in Boise who had written a book about the Camino.
Get out of here.
And the person tapped him on the shoulder and said, that guy you're looking for, he's right there.
Oh my gosh.
That's how I met Paul and Naomi. And our friendship has blossomed ever since then. And we did a retreat. Naomi hosted a retreat in Mexico last year that I went on. And a year before COVID, we were going to both do a retreat in Rishikesh, India. And it was funny. Naomi said, hey, I can help you out. And she wasn't like a business partner. She was just going to go along for free.
Okay.
And so I go, okay, well, you know, help me out any way you can. And 8 minutes later, she had nine of 10 spots filled.
Get out of here.
And that's just who she is.
Yes, that sounds like Naomi for sure.
Yeah.
So you're from Boise, Idaho, right?
I was born and raised in the big city of Boise, and I'm 57 years old.
Great.
So I could set the record.
Have you been to a lot of yoga studios in town?
You know, not as many as you would expect. I really have only been to the Hot Yoga on Broadway, and I used to go to Move all the time. It absolutely broke my heart when it shut down.
Yeah.
And I used to go to Marissa's studio, and when that shut down, Sage, I about had a heart attack. And then the only other one has been Naomi's in the North End. And those are the only ones. And it's interesting. I love yoga. I've been practicing now for, I believe, 8 or 9 years. And I did my teacher training in Rishikesh, India, in 2017. And when I was over there, I kind of learned a whole different style. And it was much slower, very, you know, fewer number of poses and not so much exercise oriented, more pose and mind oriented. And I started thinking, well, where in Boise can I go to do that kind of yoga? And I hate to say it, but nothing really crossed my mind. So I've had this extra room in my home that I've had for like a long time. And I made it a bedroom and no one ever slept there. And then I made it a reading room. I put some couches in there and all this and that. And I think, oh, over 14 years, not a book was read in there. And so sitting in India, I said, why don't I take that extra room and turn it into a yoga room? So I made a studio in my house. And so when I'm in Boise, which even though I live there, I'm not there very much.
You're not there right now. In fact, we're on Zoom right now.
What's that?
You're not even there right now. We're on Zoom right now.
I'm not. I know. So I made a studio in my house. And so when I'm in Boise, where I practice most is at my home. And I'd say 95% of that time is alone. Sometimes I'll have a friend over. But usually just a solo practice.
So I picked up your book, and it's called Practice, where you talk about your trip to Rishikesh, India, to do yoga. And I've only gotten like to page 46, which it's an easy read. I think I was already starting to giggle on the very first page. I really dig your writing. And one of the things that you said earlier in your chapters is you met a young man in India, and he was training to become a teacher. And you asked him if he was where you could find his class. And he's like, oh, I'm not ready. I still have a written test and I'm still studying. And I think by the end of 2018, you said he had 3,500 hours of training beneath him. But at that point you had spoken to him, he had maybe 1,000 and he wasn't ready to teach yet, which is so interesting because in the States, most of our teacher trainings are 200 hours.
Yeah, that young man, his name is Vishvash Kumar. And I met him in a restaurant he worked at, another of a gazillion magic friends I have in India. And yeah, it just blew me away. At the time, I think he was like 18 or 19 years old. And yeah, I go, what do you do? He goes, well, I'm studying to teach yoga. And I go, can I take class from you? And he just said, I'm not worthy. Wow. I need much more training. And, you know, I thought he'd had like, you know, 10 hours or something. And yeah, he laid that enormous number on me, and I just couldn't believe it. And I don't think I've ever met a more humble human being than Vishwas. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. In India, the average income is $1,500 per year. Now think about that. $1,500 per year, less than $150 a month, is the average amount of income that people make over there. And I've made 5 trips to that area. And each trip has been for a minimum of 4 weeks and maximum of 6. So really, I've been there almost 6 months of my life. And I've met a bunch of really good people. And I don't have enough money to really change anybody's life here because it would take so much. It doesn't take much to change people's life in India. Wow. And that young man, Vishvash, I offered him money over and over and over just to help him out, to maybe let him, you know, slide or be a little bit better. And over 5 years, he never asked for help. And about, oh, I think it was, I don't know, 2 months ago, he reached out to me on Instagram and just said, man, I need help. And I need it now. And in a heartbeat, I just said, whatever you need, man, I'll help you out. And it was really meaningful to me. And so that's how those bonds continue forward.
Why do you think he took so long to ask for help?
I think it was COVID. I think he typically did, he was actually going to China and teaching yoga. And so he, you know, he finally realized he was a very good teacher, and you could almost from India go to China and be a little bit of a celebrity. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the guru teacher from India. And a lot of people do that, and he couldn't go. And in all tourism, the tourist visas have shut off in India. So I have a 10-year visa. I can't go. and have not been able to go for the past, you know, really year plus.
Wow.
And I think he had nowhere else to go. I know his mother and father are deceased, and he supports his family, and he just ran out of gas. And I was nothing made me happier than to help him out.
That's great. You guys have been able to stay in touch after meeting in India. I do want to backtrack a bit to your experience in teacher training in India. Was it a 200-hour teacher training, or was it a 1,000-hour teacher training? What kind of style was it there compared to an American style, could you say?
Well, what I did a traditional 200-hour teacher training, and I believe it follows the same, you know, U.S. Yoga Alliance, where you have to have a certain number of hours of this and that. Yeah. And the way it worked out, on my first trip to India, I went to this teacher who, I don't know if you've met him yet, but his name is Surrender.
Yeah, I got and to that part.
I think the man is the greatest teacher I've ever had. And I've been fortunate to have, you know, practiced with a lot of people. And so in just being a tourist over there, I took his class all the time. And finally, I said, you know, if I signed up for his training, I could spend all day with him and I could just absorb and learn more. So I really had very little interest in teaching yoga, but I had a lot of interest in learning more about it. And so I signed up for the class with him, and the whole experience was magical. First off, check this out. 16 people in my class, again, 16 souls.
Okay.
Not one single country was duplicated.
Really?
Now, there's 195 countries in the world, and so to just imagine 16 different countries, we were from the Ukraine, one woman was from Poland, a woman from Holland, a man from Ecuador, we had France, Germany, Australia. So just this hodgepodge of people. And at the time, let's see, it was 17. So what do we have? It's 5 years ago. So I was in my early 50s. And I was at least 10 years older than everybody and 20 plus years older than most. And what was cool is Surrender has a yoga shala where the yoga studio is on the fifth floor and the four floors below are rooms. And there's four rooms on each floor. So we all stayed in the building and we shared all of our meals together. And then we did the training. We would go up and do, you know, the asana practice. And then we would have, you know, the anatomy and the more classical teaching of the history of yoga, et cetera, throughout the day. And then we had chanting and meditation at night, which was really spectacular. But just to be in Rishikesh, which is said to be the yoga capital of the world, to be with my dear friend Surrender, and then surrounded by 16 souls from 16 different countries. I mean, I don't know why everybody doesn't go there and do the training. And it was also unnomical. I don't know what it cost at the time. Tuition, room, and board. Now get all those down. All three of those together. $1,500 for the month.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
So your plane ticket's $1,000-$1,500 and the training is, you know, $1,500 with food and room. I mean, it's economical to go there and do it.
Were you sick of Indian food afterwards?
What is that?
Were you tired of eating Indian food after it? Were you like, I need McDonald's?
I don't think I ever can. I love Indian food.
Yes.
And that particular city, it's considered to be a holy city. And so what that means is there's no alcohol and there's also no meat product of any kind. So not only is it all vegetarian, there's no chicken, there's no eggs or anything.
Wow.
And so just the whole change in diet is kind of a cool thing to experience while you're there.
I'm really curious the turning point for you from doing hot yoga in Idaho to being like, oh, I'm going to go to India to, oh my gosh, I need to take this training. Like there was a shift where you went from doing yoga for the physicality of it, perhaps, to describing it as magic and meeting souls and wanting chanting and meditation. Did you always kind of lean into the more esoteric aspects of yoga before you got into yoga? What was that shifting point for you?
Well, it's kind of a hard answer. First off, I believe nothing in life should ever be half-assed. If it's only worth half-assing, why do it? So I tend to dive into whatever I do with passion, enthusiasm, whatever it may be. And I started yoga, I think in 2012 or 13. And I just thought it was another form of exercise. And I really looked at it like, instead of going to a gym, I would do yoga. And I kind of very mysteriously, and it's a much longer story, I got invited to go to India, and I went over there with 2 years of yoga under my belt. And I got there, and no one had ever taught me that flexibility in your body is a very good thing, which we all know. I mean, how many times you hear somebody say, why do you do yoga? Well, I do yoga for flexibility. No one ever told me that I could transfer that flexibility to my mind, mm-hmm. and that having a flexible mind is a very good thing. No one told me that creating space in my spine meant that I could also maybe open up space in my life for other situations, other viewpoints, other things along those lines. So I don't think anything happens by coincidence. I think I had the 2 years of using yoga as a gymnasium to maybe get me a little asana experience. And then the seed was planted in India to really teach me what yoga is about. And to me, it's much more how you can take it into your life. And then each year, I mean, I had the third year was a teacher training. Then I ended up writing a book about it. And then the last year I went, I did a yoga retreat over there with 9 people from throughout the world. And had COVID not hit, I would have done one with Naomi.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers it, but
yeah, sure.
I hope it does.
What do you think your biggest misconception was by the time you got to India and were in a training and you've been going back for retreats? Could you look back and say, wow, I had a big misconception?
What was my biggest misconception?
Yeah, of yoga.
Oh, that yoga is a physical practice. I don't see it that way at all. I know that would be hard for somebody to understand, but the physical benefit of yoga to me is a trinket you pick up along the path. It's a nice thing to have, but it's not the path.
It's the icing on the cake.
You got it. And so I never really understood the idea of really going inward, finding the peace, finding the calmness. And that's 100% of it. And for me.
How come you decided to write a book about it?
What is that?
How come you decided to write a book about it? I know you wrote a book about, what's it called? The El Camino?
Yeah, I did a walk in Spain called the Camino de Santiago, it's a 500-mile pilgrimage walk, and I'd never written anything before, and so I don't like have a history of being a writer, but after having that experience, which takes about a month or 4 to 6 weeks for most folks, I just decided I have to write about this and share this experience. So writing a book's hard. It took me a year. And guess what? When you've never written a book, no one wants to publish you. I mean, who's going to publish me? Nobody. So I kind of made my own book tour. And I did over a couple years, like 150 events. And I think I had visited 6 states and talked and met all these people and told them about the Camino. That's what ultimately opened up the door to go to India. So they all kind of built upon each other. And anyway, during my teacher training, and you'll get to this point in the book, I just had a really meaningful experience. May kind of gross somebody out, but I watched some cremation on the banks of the river. And kind of contemplating death in such an open environment and outdoors, and as families continue to just walk by and, you know, the kids are playing and whatever, it was just a moment. And I thought, you know, I've got 3 years experience in India. A lot of people don't know what it's about. So I think I should put the band back together and try it again. And so I did. And that's why I made the second book.
And then you, when you came back home, you're like, I'm going to turn this empty room I've never used into a yoga studio.
Yeah.
Do you use it often?
My home one?
Yeah.
Oh, I use it all the time.
So that's good. You change, you broke the cycle.
Completely. And I use it all the time, but it's kind of weird. In a normal year, I would typically be gone, let me think, I'm typically gone 4 months and home 8 months. And that's it. When COVID hit, I think most people did the opposite. They stayed home more. And I swapped it where I'm gone 8 months, home 4 months. So I'm not there so much, and that could change. I don't really know how, what, why, or when, but yeah, when I'm at home, I feel like I'm on vacation and I have a yoga studio in my house. So it's awesome.
I was reading the back of your book, or somewhere in your book, you basically were like, I'm retiring at 36 and I'm going to travel. I don't know anyone who's done that. I think that's really neat.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I did that. And what I would just like to say, when I tell people that, when I tell someone that I stopped the work that early, they just immediately make an assumption that I was very wealthy, and I was not. And I did go to college, and I ended up getting a good job. I worked at Micron Technology. I was in sales. And I worked there for roughly 9 years, and I did some consulting work after that. But Christina, I can promise you that had I gone to like a financial advisor who was like legit, and I would said, this is how much I have, I'm thinking about like not working again, they would have said, are you freaking crazy, man? I hope you like beanies and Franks, because that's what you're going to be eating. And so what I did instead, I didn't think it would last this long. I just kind of took a leap, and I've always tried to live my life under the theory of jump and worry about the water level later, and that things will work out, and that the universe does in fact have my back. So when I stopped the work, I just thought there has to be more to life than working for the man. And, you know, I got enough kind of gas in the tank to go for a little while. And in my wildest dreams, I never thought it would go to this length. And at this point in time, I think I'm unemployable. If somebody asked me to go to a meeting, I'd be like, you mean like today at 10? No, I don't think that works. And the benefits of just, and there's a lot of different ways to travel. I mean, my brother cracks me up. My brother is a financial giant. He's a real estate agent. He's been selling houses for 35 years and has for 34 of those years probably been a top five guy in Boise. He goes to weekend in Vegas, and he'll spend $10,000. And so he just thinks that that's what like a day's travel is. When I go to Rishikesh, India, the trip over there, the plane ticket is $1,500. A hotel in India, about $10 a night. And you can't spend more than $10 a day on food. You can't do it. I mean, if you go to a big restaurant, you know, in New Delhi or something, you can. But if you just want to fill your body with good nutrition, you can't spend more than that. So I go there for 6 weeks, about a $3,000 trip. You know, that's not insane, I think, by a lot of different standards. So there's always a way to do it. And right now I've kind of fallen into this new thing where I spend a lot of time in Ketchum, and some friends asked me to house sit. And I do a lot of yoga up here. And then in the yoga studio, people, they'd say, well, what do you do? And I go, I'm a squatter. And they go, a squatter? What do you mean? I go, well, I house sit. Pretty soon, all my yoga friends started asking me to house sit for them. And now I've kind of like built up this network of people where I'm up here a lot. And I'm up here now, and I'm going to be up here December, January, February, March, and April, house sitting.
So it sounds like you just did a transition, like a lifestyle transition, pretty much, where you wanted to change your life. And I feel like for me, I do yoga every day. I don't feel like my work is stressful. I'm able to take 2-hour breaks in the afternoon to go walk my dogs and take a nap, which I feel like is more in alignment with what I need mentally and physically to be healthy. And so some people probably don't take me very seriously. They're like, oh, she's a yoga teacher. She doesn't make 6 figures and she's not stressed out and miserable at her job. And I think that's really normalized a lot. And so when people say, like they're upset at their job, and I'm like, well, just quit and do what you're passionate about and it will work out. They're like, oh no, I can't do that. What do you say to those people?
Well, I feel sorry for a lot of people that get kind of stuck in that mold. You know, their soul knows it's not really them, but the compensation is very understandable. I mean, you have to feed yourself, you have to feed your family, you have to take care of business. You know, you can't just live on the street. There's no question about that. I have many friends that are just flat ass broke, that have no money. And I have many friends that have more money than either of us could possibly imagine. And I don't think there's any correlation to happiness. And I would really say that if I really look down at it, I think my more wealthy friends are more unhappy. I think at some point the money becomes a burden, and it becomes a little bit of a problem. And then you get caught in the whole rat race where, you know, you kind of look at your friends, you kind of start to equate yourself of, who am I? Well, I'm a salesman at Micron. You know, what do? I sell computer chips. Who am I? I'm computer chip man. And then you start to make some cash. And then, like most people, you just live at whatever amount of money you make. And instead of looking at what you need and what you can humbly survive with, I mean, anyone can get in a car and drive up to Ketchum and enjoy everything up here. Now, there's gazillionaires that probably live inside of these homes that are, you know, $20 million homes. And, you know, they're probably upset because the carpet isn't perfect. But anyone can go and walk up the mountain. Anyone can look at the fall leaves. Anyone can look at the water coming down the stream. So I don't think that the money really correlates to the happiness. And so I'm with you. I would encourage people, follow your passion and you'll find out how your life falls into place. Follow a financial goal and work just for the money and your life will fall to pieces. And, you know, 20 years down the road, you look in the rear of your mirror and go, oh, shouldn't have done that. But you got 20 years gone.
There's a lot of information and nuggets in that little piece you just said. I love the wisdom that you shared just now. And you do speaking events. You are an author. I'm just so stoked that you came on my little tiny podcast. And you told me that if I bought your book, you would give me 2 of these books, correct?
Yes, I will. Here's the deal. Not only will I do that, I'll give you 2 of the other one also. So when I finally do meet you, I'll give you 2 practice books. And the other one is A Million Steps. And that's a Camino book. So you get 4 books. So you can pay it forward and pass it on. And that would be spectacular.
So this is what I want to do is I want to do a giveaway to my listeners. So if you're listening to this episode right now, this is going to come out next Wednesday. So today's October 6th. What is a week from October 6th, Travis? The 13th. So this comes out on the 13th. If you're listening right now, shoot me an email at xtinayoga@gmail.com, or you can go to Instagram and click the link in bio. Shoot me over your overheard at yoga story. And then I guess the first four people to email me will get a book. So I also have to ask you this, Kurt, before we go, is what have you overheard at yoga?
Well, ironically, let me think. Ironically, I came up here. I got up here in Ketchum on Saturday. And one of the main reasons I came up here was one of my favorite teachers teaches on Monday and Wednesday. Sunday afternoon, she sent me a note and said, I can't teach my class this week. Can you teach my classes for me? And I said, sure, I will. So I actually taught this morning here at Gather. And I think the coolest thing I heard was the owner of the studio was in the class and she looked out and she said, you know, today is a good day for a good day.
Today is a good day for a good day. I think that's a good yoga mentality to have. I think that's probably why I love yoga so much, is the community of people who are striving towards a healthy mindset and healthy attitude and a lifestyle that promotes being healthy. So
absolutely.
Is there anything else that you'd like to plug while I've got you here? Like what's coming up? Things that our friends should know, where they can find your books and follow you?
You know, I don't really, I have a website. It's my name, Kurt Koontz, KurtKoontz.com. And if anyone wants to reach out, just call me. My number is 208-345-6421. And I love to do yoga. So if you want to do some practice or have any questions about, you know, yoga, the Camino, life in general, I'm happy to help anybody anytime. And what's coming up? I don't have the slightest idea. Planning. When I gave my speeches on the Camino, I used to always ask people. I think collectively I spoke to about 15,000 people through all those speeches. And I would always ask the question, I go, is anyone in this room where they expected to be 5 years ago? And out of all those 15,000 people, one guy raised his hand one time. I think he misunderstood the question. And so, you know, what's going to happen down the road? What happens 6 months? I don't have any idea. But I know today I taught a little yoga this morning. Look forward to this time here. I'm going to run to the store, get some berries so I can have some granola tomorrow morning. And I'm having dinner with a friend tonight. And tomorrow, I don't have the slightest idea. But you know what? It's going to be a good day.
It's a good day to have a good day. Also, when Naomi was mentioning you, I was like, well, if he would want to be on the podcast, ask him if I can have his number. I ordered your book and your number was on the back of the book. I think that's so rad. Thank you so much.
You know, actually there's a pretty funny story to that. On the very first book I did, the Camino book has outsold the yoga book big time. And I've sold about 15,000 Camino books, which for an independent author is really, that's quite a few. That would put me in the top 1% of self-published authors. But it's kind of like the 1/10 and the 1%. There's a real big difference between me and the person who's really done it well. But that's quite a few books. I put my number on the back of that book also. I've got one phone call.
Really?
Isn't that funny?
Who called you?
I mean, what's that?
Who called you?
Just this person who called up and asked about the book, said they read the book and they liked it and had some questions about it. And I get a lot of email. And a lot of people reach out to me on Facebook and stuff like that with either yoga question or Camino question. But yeah, one person called. And I remember when I talked to the person that helped with the cover, don't put your number on the book. Oh my gosh, you're going to be, I go, well, too many people call, we just take it off.
Yeah.
And it's like everything, just fear.
What kind of yoga questions do you get from people calling you?
People just ask me, how did I start to do yoga? What kind of yoga do I prefer? What benefits have I found in practicing yoga? And, you know, as you well know, It's the title of the book is Practice. And what we do every time we do yoga is a yoga practice. And I don't know, a lot of people probably know this, but it took me about 5 years of doing yoga to understand it. It can never be perfect. It's always a practice and you're always learning something new. And I actually zoom into yoga quite a bit. There's a teacher up here I really like. And when I'm not in town, I try to take a class. And the other day, I mean, how long have you done yoga? How many years?
Like 15.
15 years. And you do it pretty much daily?
Yeah.
I'm 8 or 9 years into it. And I probably do, I'd say 200 classes per year. So, you know, a pretty healthy practice. And the other day I learned something about downward dog that it was like, oh my God, you're kidding me. And again, you can just always improve. You can always learn. You can always be open to something new. And then again, take that into your, you know, into your real life.
What's your astrology sign? I'm so curious.
Capricorn.
I don't know much about Capricorn. Do you?
Not really.
Okay.
I know that you said the show airs on October 13. October 13 is my mom's 86th birthday.
Oh my gosh. How cool is that? That's so rad. She's a Libra. Yeah. And I know a little bit about Libra. I'm going to like look up Capricorn right now because I'm just really curious what the headlines are on that one.
Lay it on me. Share something with me.
Okay. Dear Google, what does Capricorn mean? Let's see. It's not giving me. Oh, that's because I didn't do it right. Go. Here we go. It is the 10th astrological sign in the zodiac. It's ruled by the planet Saturn. Da-da-da. Here we go. Personality. It's a sign that represents responsibility, self-control, discipline. It has good manners. You have great manners, I've noticed. It says your weaknesses could be know-it-all, unforgiving. I don't know if that's you. You like family, tradition, music. Huh. I'm just getting a lot of the element of water with you. You seem to really go with the flow, but it says that you're an element of earth. We're going to have to learn your whole birth chart at some point. So if you can look up your date of birth and the time you're born, you'll get your full birth chart. I'm just fascinated by astrology. It seems kind of intriguing and entertaining. Does any of that make sense to you? Do you feel like a grounded earth sign, very disciplined and self-control?
I like the grounded and all that. I definitely have discipline, but I don't know about like, you know, self-control and, I mean, I have it, but you know, I don't know. I don't think it's really responsible to necessarily quit work young. And
well,
I don't think it's
it says,
super responsible.
It just says that you're reliable and intelligent, loyal. You are a great friend. They need to be surrounded by people who don't ask too many nosy questions. That's funny.
Who don't ask what?
Nosy questions. I don't really know about that one.
I'm wide open. I'm 100% wide open book. And yeah, it's all.
Yeah. If a Capricorn is listening to this and everything I'm saying is wrong, please message me and tell me what a Capricorn actually is. I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on my little podcast. I hope to meet you. I'm excited to get those books from you and share them with my listeners. That's awesome.
Christina, you will. I'm back in Boise on the 20th of October until the 21st. And then I'm going to Mexico to teach yoga for a couple of weeks.
Awesome.
So how good is that?
Cool. Let's keep in touch. Let's grab coffee and I'm going to get those books from you. I'm so excited.
Can't wait. Sounds like a blast. Thanks for having me on your program. You're a superstar. Any friend of Naomi's is a friend of mine for life. And so you're pretty well stuck with me.
Great. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Adios.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and I want to hear from you. Please send me your overheard at yoga stories. Tell me about your yoga journey, what you love about your home studio, or the funny thing you overheard at yoga. Find me on Instagram at overheardat.yoga to submit. There are so many different styles of yoga and opinions about yoga, but the one thing I've seen in all my travels to different studios is yoga brings a community together. Namaste.